Bloomberg Daybreak Europe, weekday mornings at 6 a.m. on London DAB digital radio and on demand via the Bloomberg Business app and BloombergRadio.com.
This Friday, we'll get an update on the state of the UK economy with second quarter GDP figures. Now, a Bloomberg survey of economists has found that the UK economy probably shrank 0.2% in the second quarter. This as the Bank of England expects inflation to top 13% in October. Joining us now is Nina Scarrow, CEO of the Centre for Economics and Business Research, in the studio. Thanks for joining us, Nina. I want to start with the Bank of England's gloomy forecasts last week. Obviously, the bank can't take account of unconfirmed fiscal policy, right? But does that mean that they're being too gloomy? Is there a risk that the bank's going to talk us into a recession?
It is a risk, but they aren't saying anything that a lot of other commentators aren't saying. What they're saying is that they expect a more prolonged downturn than others are. So we ourselves are expecting a recession. We are expecting a recession of a couple of quarters of negative growth. I was taken aback that they're expecting a five-quarter recession over the entirety of next year. And what that makes that a little bit worrying, what that sets the Bank of England apart from forecasters is they are a participant, so they actually have the power not just to predict what's going to happen based on, you know, an external set of assumptions, but they're actually going to be contributing to that growth. So it did seem to me like an acceptance of the fact that this inflation isn't coming down no matter what they do with monetary policy and that we're going to need a recession.
How does it compare then to your forecasts? Are you more optimistic about the UK economy?
We're more optimistic than the Bank of England, but by no means very optimistic. So we are for 2023 expecting growth of around 0.5%, which by most measures would not be a very good performance. However, when you see that the Bank of England is expecting basically performance that's four times worse than that and below zero, I guess compared to that very low level of expectations, we are a little bit more upbeat.
And even more so in recent days, the Bank of England Governor Andrew Bailey's come under huge criticism personally for being asleep at the wheel in his handling of the inflation crisis. Is that justified?
The criticism is justified. It's difficult to look at an inflation rate that is five times its target and say that some criticism isn't justified. What's being used now as a scapegoat is the Russia-Ukraine conflict, saying nobody could have seen that coming. Is that true? It absolutely is. But would we be having massive above target inflation problems even if it was not for that conflict? That is also true. So that conflict really exacerbated an already bad situation. And that already bad situation was a lot more predictable in terms of the demand boom, in terms of the supply chain pressures, in terms of labor shortages feeding into price levels. So a lot of this situation was predictable. And this narrative around Ukraine, Russia is being used to deflect some of that criticism, which I think is largely justified.
I'm interested in the research that you have out about wage rises today, seeing the higher income earners getting much bigger pay rises than those on lower incomes. What sort of detail did you find?
So we looked at the latest pay data and, as you say, found that the top earning 1%, quite a lot of that group are city workers, particularly in the finance sector. We're seeing wage rises that matched inflation, although given where inflation is, even they are technically seeing sort of stagnant real wage rises. But what is most concerning is the bottom earning 10% are only seeing wage rises of 1%. So their real incomes are really, really not keeping up with inflation. And what's compounding those concerns is that also the inflation rate that is actually being experienced and observed by the lowest earners will be higher than the headline rate, because a much higher share of their expenditures is on energy, which is one of the categories, or in fact the category, that's been worst impacted by price rises.
And Nina, speaking of pay, CBER estimated that those June transport strikes would have cost the economy £100 million. Do you have a new updated estimate for all the strikes we're now having this summer? And given that the Bank of England sees inflation now peaking not just in double digits but above 13%, does it give the unions more ammunition in their pay negotiations?
I can't give you an estimated, an updated figure just because the details of the strike, and there is still a little bit of hope that maybe some of the ones that are planned for the rest of the summer won't be going ahead. But I mean, definitely watch this space. I suspect we'll be putting new estimates out once things are a little bit closer to being confirmed. Does it give the unions more bargaining power? It probably does, but it's a very political beast, the whole process. So how much of it is rooted in fact, and you know, how much leverage do they have? Their leverage has certainly grown with inflation doing what it's doing, and also the fact that there's already been a lot of pushback publicly on the level of disruption that's been caused, and a lot of, I think, negative attention pointed towards the government once it emerged. There actually haven't been a lot of direct face-to-face conversations between the ministers and the unions, which I think, you know, a lot of us would have been expecting that to happen on a regular basis. So there's been a lot of, I think, a lot of the public opinion has put pressure on the situation.
And just coming back to the Bank of England, Liz Truss, the front runner to be the next Prime Minister, is proposing this BOE mandate review. How worrying is the idea that's being floated of targeting nominal GDP instead of inflation, given how hard GDP is to measure, given we're in the midst of an inflation crisis?
I wouldn't put too much emphasis on that sort of story from last week that emerged from the leadership race. Is sort of tinkering around with the mandate going to have a fundamental difference on the performance of the Bank of England? And also, what exactly are the details of that? I think it was left deliberately vague. Assuming it is Liz Truss we're seeing as the next prime minister, there are so many higher priorities in terms of the cost of living crisis, in terms of the foreign policy agenda, in terms of the immigration agenda. I can't actually imagine sort of picking a fight with the Bank of England being anywhere near the top of the priority list for the new prime minister, whoever they are.
Bloomberg Daybreak Europe, weekday mornings at 6 a.m. on London DAB Digital Radio and on demand via the Bloomberg Business app and BloombergRadio.com.